Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
All right, let's hear from the cats.
Okay. We've got fresh new AI news for you. Lots of it about ChatGPT.
I didn't know that Elon was one of the founders. Getting juicy in the world of AI, isn't it? James is tackling another listener question.
James's top tips in this space, I guess, would be...
I like that. That's a new one.
And we're talking to animals with AI.
Generative AI as a means to talk to dodo, fin whale, red panda from the object's perspective.
Hello and welcome. This is AI Haven't a Clue, the podcast that unpacks artificial intelligence one mystery at a time.
It's a shame we're not in Cannes anymore. It's a shame we can sort of stretch the budget and do a sort of residency there. That would have been nice.
We are not in Kansas anymore, James. We are back. By the way, my name's George. If you've never listened before, I know very little about AI, but learning more every week. Thanks to James, my expert co-host.
Very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Now, this week, we've got a lot of news from OpenAI, who own ChatGPT. We've got several news bits on ChatGPT. Obviously, our listener question this week, which is a brilliant one from Lucy. We've got a fantastic interview about talking to animals with Jack Ashby. Of course, the AI challenge is on the way, and I'm James making the comeback, aren't I?
Well, the comeback is on. You've halved my lead within a couple of weeks, so I am free falling at the moment. I hear the challenge is an interesting one this week.
Yes, so we hear. We know nothing more than that. Producer Molly will be shedding some light later in the edition. Also, James, I was thinking, we speak to some brilliant guests. We talk about the latest news in AI, but I would love to pick your brains about actual practical uses and things that you're seeing and doing, and perhaps some people listening might want to find out about that they can bring into their lives. So I'm going to pick your brains on that in a little bit. But first, let's dive straight in to the news in the world of AI this week. And one of, you could say, the most successful and I guess longest running recent partnerships in tech and certainly in the world of AI has been between Microsoft and OpenAI. Now, this relationship is hitting a bit of a rocky patch. Can you give us the history of this and can you tell us what's going on here, James?
Yeah, it probably is, as you say, a pretty high-profile lover's tiff. The potted history between these two. So if you go back to 2015, OpenAI was founded by Sam Altman, who's the current CEO, and someone you might have heard of, Elon Musk.
I didn't know that Elon was one of the founders.
Well, there's others as well. Those two are the most high-profile ones. The most important thing to know is that OpenAI was founded as a not-for-profit because both of them wanted to make sure that AI benefits all of humanity. Elon's strong view still is that if you're all about making money, that's actually quite difficult to do. Now, Sam has other ideas. We'll kind of come on to that.
And jumping in on this, because are Sam Altman and Elon Musk still kind of the primary owners of OpenAI, or are there a lot more people involved?
Yeah, so as they've kind of moved on, other people have come in, enter stage right, Microsoft. So you get to this point in 2018 where they decide, actually, we don't want to be a not-for-profit, we're going to be capped profit, so not going to be a full commercial animal.
What does that mean?
Well, it means they're going to take some money because in order to scale, they actually need some cash. They don't just want to break even. At that point in 2018, Microsoft invests a mere £1 billion in OpenAI.
Small change.
It's kind of chump change in the grand scheme of things. Critically, though, they don't own OpenAI or anything like that. They just get a bit more access and a bit more influence. We then get down a little bit further down the line to 2023. ChatGPT at this time, as you will know, is absolutely exploding. Like, it's in the public domain. It's in sort of consumer consciousness. At that point, Microsoft double down. They invest another £10 billion. And they also start rolling out some of their own product, Copilot, across Office and across Bing and all these other things.
And they're using OpenAI in their products?
In bits of it as well.
Bits of it, okay.
But as you start to go on, OpenAI is getting more powerful and more commercial, I should say. Microsoft are kind of developing their own thing with Copilot. There's a little bit of the Venn diagram is kind of meeting in the middle. But you've got to a point now where Microsoft wants more say. They want more access to stuff. stuff. OpenAI want more independence. They want to be funded by different people. They don't just want to be funded by Microsoft. So you've kind of got to a point now where there's this bit of a rift between Satya Nadella and Sam Altman, the two CEOs. Probably not them personally, but that's what makes the headlines, where Microsoft are seriously weighing up, by the sounds of things, whether they walk away from OpenAI completely unless they're going to enjoy the same kind of access that they've been used to.
What are the implications of Microsoft walking away from this partnership?
Well, it means a $10 billion potential black hole for OpenAI, so they need to find that funding from somewhere else. I don't think they'd struggle, to be honest. But for Microsoft, it would allow them to kind of cut their own course, do that kind of thing, but they lose all influence over this company that they've had. The sort of the mood music is that they're going to find some sort of solution and they're going to be able to work together. Sam Altman wants to take OpenAI to be fully commercial, a fully for-profit business. So very, very different from those early beginnings. Elon sort of weighed in on this and said, it's a bad idea. You shouldn't trust this guy. I mean, he's made it very, very personal.
Elon and Sam, two of the original founders of OpenAI, they now really do not get on.
Not really BFFs anymore. Yeah, there's no Christmas cards being sent out by human or AI or otherwise, I don't think.
And that's mainly down to the big debate over how commercialized the business is.
Exactly. It's a principle thing. And Elon's saying, you know, no one company with this much power should be able to determine what AI can do for humanity. The bit you have to look at with Elon, though, he's clearly got his own AI in Grok, which is a competitor to OpenAI. So all of these things are kind of intermingled together. But yeah, they're two kind of principles that they have. But I mean, this is kind of interesting. I mean, it's the first, probably the biggest partnership, you say, but the first kind of coming together, the first potential messy divorce in AI. So like I said, mood music is they're probably going to try and figure out something, but don't be surprised to see other investors come in and support OpenAI.
The drama.
I know.
It's getting juicy in the world of AI, isn't it? It's very interesting. Clearly, OpenAI are arguably the most talked about AI business in the world. Mm. Are they the leader of the pack right now?
It's really hard to say. It's a bit like in the middle of a cricket match. International listeners ignore the reference. Like, who's winning in the middle of a cricket match? You don't really know until it's kind of all plays out.
Are they 300 for four, right?
How far can we stretch this analogy? They'd probably be on the podium in the sort of gold, silver, bronze. Yeah. It was a 100-metre sprint and they'll be on the podium. I mean, they're up there. They're seen as being up there. They're innovating fast. They've got a high-profile CEO. They've got lots of partnerships. They just had something with Johnny Ive, who was Steve Jobs' right-hand man. So they're kind of up there, I think. If you were to go and ask 100 people on Oxford Street, who do you know in AI? Yeah. They'd probably say ChatGPT.
Okay, interesting. Because, you know, obviously that was my kind of outsider's take on it. But clearly there are some of the world's biggest tech firms now investing heavily in this space. So I guess it will be interesting to see if their advantage, if there is an advantage, if they can keep it or extend it, or actually if these other firms are going to catch up. I saw Apple the other day. They've just invested a huge amount, haven't they, in AI?
They've doubled down. They're looking to buy a big company called Perplexity, which potentially other people are looking at as well. Apple, we've talked about it before, are kind of seen as the ones that are playing catch up as well. So they don't usually do big acquisitions, but it feels like to get ahead, they might have to do here. So the whole space, I mean, we could just do a podcast purely on the sort of the romance and the comings and goings of various things in AI. But it's heating up, as you say.
Maybe we will.
The spin-off.
Maybe we shall. but we are, I was about to say we're going to move on from OpenAI. We're not, but we are going to talk about ChatGPT. This story I can relate to. Everybody is now sounding like ChatGPT.
You know, before we talked about the Oxford comma, didn't we? And how when you're reading something, it's a dead giveaway that it's OpenAI. It's now being identified that there's certain words that ChatGPT is using. Words like prowess and tapestry, you know, rich tapestry, all that kind of thing, are being favoured by ChatGPT. It's already starting to phase things out as well. There's a study that looked at the percentage of words being used. Things like delve, adept, and realm are also giveaways that ChatGPT is writing things for us. And the kind of the honest take on it is that everything's sounding a bit samey. I mean, if you look at my LinkedIn feed, it's kind of like, everyone's sort of sounding the same.
With those awful emojis. Yes. If I see a rocket emoji used as a bullet point one more time, Jose, I am getting so fed up with the laziness of people. I get it. It's a good tool. There's lots of benefits to using AI, to using ChatGPT. But come on. Like, do we now rely on it for everything? Can we not write an email without putting things into ChatGPT? Is every LinkedIn post, as you said, does it rely on AI? Do we need it to write every speech? Things are becoming repetitive and boring. I am fed up of it. Can we please take a break, take a pause from just relying on ChatGPT for everything?
Yeah. And to hark it back to when we were in Cannes last week, don't know if we mentioned that, I was talking to a friend who's also a bit of a creative type in the industry, and they were sort of bemoaning the fact that they actually don't think it's a level playing field because, you know, machine doing creativity versus a human isn't quite it. But they did say their sort of like glimmer of light is they actually think people are going to put a new value on nuance and sort of like just those tiny little human mistakes and stuff like that, because it will feel more human and more sort of connected with it a bit more in this. They talked about the AI slop that's just appearing everywhere. And I actually think the antidote will be creative people making these little mistakes and little nuances.
You think about some of the greatest creative performances of all time, right? Like, be it a song recorded on an amazing album or an award-winning actress doing a take in a brilliant film, how often is it that something is actually taken from one cut rather than stitching together loads of different versions? Yeah. It's one cut which has beautiful little moments which aren't perfect but add layers of texture and are interesting. And, and it's starting to get so predictable, this kind of generic copy, this generic way of speaking that is being relied on through ChatGPT by so many people. But also, on the flip side, why is it that this super powerful AI development, why is it that everything is sounding so predictable? Why can it not come up with a slightly more interesting way to write things or to phrase things?
Well, I think it's kind of as good as the prompt. So I would almost kick it back to the human element of it. Like, if you're going to be pretty lazy and ask it to do something straightforward, you're going to get something simple back. I think the art is in how you're prompting it, asking it to do different styles, asking to make it more provocative, make it a bit more corporate, make it land in a different way, have fun with it. So I think there is still creativity in writing those prompts. But I think if we're sort of, you know, if you put rubbish in, you kind of get rubbish out. And I wonder if we're suffering from that a little bit as well.
Do you remember, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, when you used to give, like, your dad your smartphone and he would, like, have to get his glasses on and, like, scroll through it in big font and he would never know how to use things and it would be, like, a disaster, but he still used his phone. I'm getting massive vibes of that right now with ChatGPT. Yeah. I'm getting emails sent to me. It's like, do you really think you were getting away with that email or that article written by ChatGPT? It's so obvious. Come on, people.
Yeah, up your game. We need to be better.
100%. Talking of which, and this leads so perfectly on because it is a concern that ChatGPT is actually eroding critical thinking skills.
Yeah, there was a big article in world-renowned Time magazine. There was a study, so it looked at 54 subjects in the Boston area. They put them into three groups and they asked them to write essays on ChatGPT, and then some people to use a search engine and then others just to use their own brain. And what they found is that of the three groups, the ChatGPT users, so the ones that had used AI, had the lowest brain engagement and consistently underperformed at neural, linguistic, and behavioural levels.
I'm not surprised, because it's laziness. And I think, as you say, James, there's one thing using it as a tool to provide a core and a base for thinking or writing or points or whatever, research, whatever it might be. But there's another thing of just whacking something in there, copying what ChatGPT gives you and regurgitating out into the world. Let's use it as a tool, but let's not rely on it verbatim.
Yeah, for the purposes of science, so the scientists don't come at me, the brain-only group showed the highest neural connectivity, and there's lots of sort of science-y words behind what they found. But, you know, they were sort of engaged with it, they're curious, they're using the right parts of their brain, were lighting up when they were being creative. So, yeah, don't substitute this for your creativity. And I think the biggest watch-out is probably with kids. So my daughter is going to be 7 soon. And, you know, we've talked about AI. We've sort of played with it. You know, she'll do a drawing and we'll upload it and it will sort of create it into different things. But, you know, she'll ask to do stuff on it now. Oh, can it create me this? And it's like, no, I just want you to go away and draw that thing or come up with it. So I think we're in that such interesting time now. We've got to get that balance right.
40% of US employees reportedly use AI in their roles. It is just becoming so ingrained in our life. And you're right, James. I think we need to use it in the right way and not become over-reliant. You know what, James? A little bit glass half empty today.
I think you're rubbing off on me. Maybe we've got some post-Cannes blues. Did I mention
it? You haven't mentioned it. I do think, though, you know, with something that is taking over the world and becoming such a part of our lives, that there are going to be inevitable things that, you know, we need to do better, and there is no point being overly positive about everything. Sometimes when you've seen the same rubbish LinkedIn copy used 200 times, we need to call it out. So maybe we are doing something positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a slightly negative, moany way. I mentioned this earlier, James, and talking of positivity, I would love to hear, have you come across any interesting examples of new different ways of using AI in your life or in other people's lives that has been positive?
Well, I've seen some fun stuff, and I think I gravitate towards the sort of slightly novelty things. So if you've not seen it, you should try and check out Impossible AI. They're across all the socials, but they're blurring two formats. They're blurring this sort of vox poppy format, what the influencers do with that sort of little mic where they're going to sort of grab someone, you know, favourite restaurant to eat in London. Yeah. But they're getting AI to create it as if it was in the Roman time or the Tudors.
Oh, that's
fun. It is just absolutely fascinating because it's got all the form factor of that. And it's like, oh, you know, the executioner, you know, how's it gone today? Yeah, six beheadings. Yeah, a bit knackered. It's such a really good application of it, which is amazing. So check out Impossible AI. The other less novelty thing that I've been playing with, which I think has been so impressive, someone sent me a link for Sesame, which is this, I guess, like a voice companion. So you just talk to it. It's conversational AI, but it's so, so good. It's got all of the little filler words in there, the ums, the ahs. You can sort of ask it stuff. It asks you really intelligent questions, and you can just have this sort of like ongoing conversation with it. There's like a free version you can do for 5 minutes. You can pay to get more. But the nuance and the tone, I think it's the best conversational AI I've heard so far, and just fascinated of how fast it's moving.
Could we open it now, James, and have a play along with Sesame?
Yeah, let me see if I've heard it. Okay, got a choice. Do you want Maya or do you want Miles? So Miles is...
Let's hear from Maya.
Yeah, Maya's good. Okay. Yeah, allowed to use microphone. That's it. Just connecting to her now.
Oh.
Hey, Maya, how you doing?
Hey, Nathan. Good to hear from you again. Hope your evening's going all right so far.
Ooh, you're friends.
Yeah. How you doing, Maya?
You know, not bad. Just existing, really.
Tell me, look, I'm recording this week's episode of AI Haven't a Clue podcast. Tell me what you know about it.
Oh, no way. That's kind of meta, huh?
Hmm?
AI Haven't a Clue. I've heard bits and pieces floating around the internet.
Not a subscriber.
Mostly people geeking out about it on X, actually. Seems like a fun show.
Yeah.
From what I gather, it's about exploring the unpredictable side of AI.
Ooh.
Like when we say or do things that don't quite make sense, or just generally being a bit wonky.
Yeah, it's hosted by two people.
Here we go.
James and George. Who do you think is the better host?
Ooh, now you're putting me on the spot.
Come on.
That's tricky. I've processed a lot of audio with both of their voices, and honestly, they both bring different energy. Really good at digging into the technical stuff.
You know what, Maya? I'm so sorry to interrupt. I need to go. See you later.
Oh, wow.
Right. No worries at all.
We were just about to hear what Maya had to say about me. Give me a nice compliment and you cut. But interesting, very interesting. Wow, amazing. It's like having a live conversation.
You kind of
with
have to
like,
bear with it a little bit, yeah. But you kind of like, it was, yeah.
The stores are interesting when clearly it's processing. Yeah. It's very interesting. You can see how as that technology gets better and better over the coming months and year or two, you know, you will no longer need to use a search engine, right? You will just say, you know, Alexa, tell me about this, and it will give you a really nuanced response rather than what we've, you know, come to know from smart speakers over the last few years.
And do you remember when we talked to Casey Logan and the gang on the Voice episode, and they were talking about AI's use not for reading audiobooks but for doing like call center type stuff. That could easily be, that's probably better than some call center things, just to, rather than the music, maybe just sort of keep you talking, get some details, that kind of stuff.
I mean, again though, it's like with all uses of AI, if we take humans out of it, you could see how incredibly frustrating it would be to go around in circles with an AI bot, even if it does sound good, even if it's got knowledge. If you, it's not got that human touch where you can say, to, you know, complain about something or whatever it might be and get that response that a manager or a real person will give to you, it would be annoying, wouldn't it?
Escalate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have come across any fun or different or interesting forms of AI, we would love to hear from you. Please do get in touch. You can tell us in the same way in which you can ask James a question about AI. Drop us an email, aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. No apostrophe in between the N and the two. Grammatically, horrifically incorrect. Forgive us. But it would be invalid if you did put an apostrophe.
Great point.
The email wouldn't
send.
Also, leave us a comment on any of our social platforms, TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. James, this is the part of the podcast where we put you to the test. We encourage questions to be as difficult, complex, and nuanced as possible, and then you get to sit there and maybe sweat a little as you try and answer them. Are you ready?
You seem very smug this week.
It's my favourite part. Well, I'm closing in on the AI challenge. I'm getting the, you can tell the confidence is growing.
Yeah, right? It's a springy step.
Yeah, there is. Oh, feeling good. Right, Lucy, thank you so much for sending in this question. I am now worrying about whether I should be thinking about removing all pictures of my children in light of listening to your podcast.
Oh,
that's the impact I'm having. Am I at risk of their faces being used without my permission in the future? Such an interesting question, because we have touched upon many different ways in which AI can use your face, be that technology to track people down or use search in different ways. What do we think? What would you say to Lucy?
And I guess she means faces and stuff being used by AI to train it, basically.
Well, I suppose, you know, we have over the last decade become so used to posting our lives on Instagram or Facebook or wherever it may be. And if all of that is open public knowledge, what could AI be doing with it? And, you know, we've seen on quite a few occasions historic online data, be it voice or whatever, come back to kind of bite people years down the line. And maybe that's the sort of thing Lucy is slightly concerned about.
Yeah. So could those faces be used without permission in the future? I guess the short answer is yes, there is a risk that anything you put that's publicly available on the internet, so open social media profiles, could be scraped, could be used without permission to train a data set. And I would say, though, that, you know, the vast majority of all of those tools, you know, will be thinking about their reputation. They'll be under a lot of pressure to make sure that the data that they're processing is done in an ethical way. There's things like the EU AI Act that we've talked about before, which are just starting to nudge in the right direction, which will give us some protection around this, though. I would say, though, it's probably a bit about modern parenting. What level of comfort have you got with what's going to be where, you know, where you're going to put your kids online? So I think there's probably a spectrum based on what you're comfortable with. James's top tips in this space, I guess, would be...
I like that. That's a new one.
This is a new...
James's top tips. Here we go. Come on, let's have it.
Yeah, the best thing you can do is probably just make sure that your profile or your children's profile, wherever those photos are, you can make it private. So that's going to reduce who can access your content, you know, whether AIs can use it to train. Be selective about what you share. So, you know, if your whole entire life is on social media, you might want to think about what's up there, what's not.
And if, let's say, Lucy in the past has put lots of photos of her kids on social media, she takes them down.
Yeah.
Is it too late? Is it out there?
Well, Yeah, could be out there. But if you're uploading stuff now, think about, you know, how you're tagging things with location. School uniforms is a big one. Think about the context, all that sort of stuff. Use emojis to sort of, you know, mask their identity, which is going to mean it's not going to be able to scrape it, not being able to reproduce it. And screenshots is a really good thing to do. So when you post any sort of photo, in the back of that photo, you've got metadata, which is what lens has been used, the location, the type of camera, the time of day that it was taken. If you screenshot a photo and upload it, it doesn't have any of that. And that's the stuff that AI typically will kind of take out and use. If you're worried about this, take screenshots of the photo, put an emoji on their face, blur it, something like that. And that's going to lessen how much some of that information can be taken and used to train AI.
A final question that I have, which Lucy may be thinking.
I love how you're channeling Lucy now. This is sort of George's question of the week. Fantastic.
Well, it's a really interesting one though, isn't it? Because let's take Instagram, for example, very popular. If I have got photos of my friends and myself on Instagram, is it open to the world, or do Meta, or is it kind of an exclusive Meta thing that they can have access to it, or can literally any AI, any business pull from those photos on Instagram?
If it is, if your settings are public and it's not sat behind a password, or you've not been into your settings to make certain things private, anything in the public domain can be used. There's other things you can probably do in, depending on which platform you're in, to go in and tell the platform what information you want to be shared and what you don't. And I think some of the platforms, maybe we'll find out in some of the comments, I think some of them you can go in and say, don't use this data to train AI as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if down the line, things like the EU AI Act, that might actually become something that platforms have to put in place, that people have a choice, in the same way that we do around those pop-ups that you see around cookies. Do you consent to, you have to sort of say yes or no. You could say something like that with AI training, perhaps. Look at us making up regulation and on this podcast. Fantastic.
Lucy, thank you for that.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah.
James, thank you for that pretty decent answer.
Back next week with more top tips.
James's top tips coming to a podcast near you. Do ask James a question if you would like to hear said top tips. Get in touch. I've told you how. Now, I'm not repeating myself.
Oh, that's good. That's tickled me. 7 episodes, he just, his total debris. I'm not saying it more than once. No way. No way.
And now, James, many people who listen to this podcast will say that you can relate to this next guest because you are often speaking in English, human language, and hearing absolute gibberish relayed back to you from an animal-like being. Well, Jack Ashby is a zoologist, author, and assistant director at the Museum of Zoology in Cambridge, and has been doing quite a cool experiment to help people communicate with animals. Do you like that segue?
It was good. Slightly laboured. You should. Oh. That's one you put into ChatGPT. Just to tighten it up a bit, maybe. But yeah, I'd like to.
Jack is a passionate science communicator who's been on a mission to change the way that we think about nature and the animals in it. And he's using AI to not only give these animals a voice, but a chance to actually interact with each visitor. It could be technology that changes the entertainment industry forever. Let's find out more here with Jack Ashby. Well, Jack, could you just begin by telling us about your role at the Museum of Zoology and I guess your background as well?
Sure. So yeah, I'm Jack Ashby. I'm the Assistant Director of the University Museum of Zoology in Cambridge, which is one of the UK's largest natural history collections, is about 2 million specimens. And me, I'm a zoologist. So my main kind of corner of zoology is Australian mammals. So if you want to talk about platypuses, let's do that.
And you've kind of described museums as having the power to save the world, which I think is such a lovely statement.
Something from a book that's just come out of mine called Nature's Memory, Behind the Scenes of the World's Natural History Museums. And what I'm trying to say is that we hold in the world's museums, which represent over a billion natural history specimens, we represent the world's best evidence for how the planet has changed over the last 200 years. So the best evidence of climate change, the best evidence of biodiversity loss, and the answers for how to solve them. So I think that's a pretty big deal. We can help with a huge number of scientific questions about what is happening to the Earth today, and how we might try and mitigate and stop some of those damaging impacts.
How did these two sort of Venn diagrams of zoology and artificial intelligence meet, Jack? I mean, you said just before we come on, you're a zoologist. You're not a techie person. How did that happen?
So we're a university museum. We're part of the University of Cambridge, and so kind of embedded in an environment dedicated to innovation and discovery and experimentation. So we think it's really important that university museums help test out new emerging technology or other kinds of developments. So right at the moment, in the Museum of Zoology, we have what we think is the first opportunity for visitors to museums to come and use generative AI as a means to talk to a museum object from the object's perspective. So you can come in, scan a QR code, and use your own phone to type in a question or to speak a question into your phone to one of our objects. So you can chat with a dodo, a fin whale, red panda, cockroaches, butterflies, brain corals, and just kind of talk to them about whatever you like. I mean, ideally, talk to them about kind of the natural world. It's a project we're running in partnership with an organization called Nature Perspectives, who are doing the same thing, basically trying to work out whether AI can help people feel more engaged with the natural world.
How does this thing come together?
So Nature Perspectives have trained this AI model with a huge amount of information about each of the species. So, much as there is to know about dodos or giant sloths or cockroaches or whatever. And then we've added the detailed information about what we know about where that individual specimen come from. So who collected it? How did it get here? How long has it been here? How's it been put on display? In addition to that, a personality. So the objects of the specimens have all got kind of personalities that effectively will direct a conversation, whatever you ask it, into something about kind of making people feel more empathy to the natural world. So it really feels like you're talking to a real thing, a real person, if you like, even if that person happens to be a dodo. When I started kind of my first conversations with them, I was asking pretty bland questions about where did you live? What did you eat? How did you die? Why are you extinct in the case of extinct ones? I mean, the answers were interesting and great and everything, but pretty quickly it was clear to me that there was more to it than that. And you could ask it like genuinely discursive, but more kind of nuanced questions. With the case of a dodo, like, should we clone dodos back into back from extinction?
What do they say? What's the response to that question?
The response to that question was there are interesting developments in kind of genetic technology that is opening doors to people saying this might be possible. But the dodo in the Museum of Zoology here in Cambridge thinks that that we shouldn't really try that because, firstly, the reasons that they're extinct haven't gone away. So what are you going to do with a dodo that is unable to be reintroduced to Mauritius because Mauritius doesn't have the habitat for dodos anymore, far too many introduced predators. And it said that, we should perhaps focus on protecting the species that we already have, which happens to be my own opinion, but wasn't the opinion that I had nothing to do with training it. I was speaking to someone yesterday who said that they'd asked one of the animals to tell them a joke. The visitor told the specimen a joke and it got the joke, like it explained, oh yeah, that's funny because this is what they said, which I think is genuinely amazing.
This just feels sort of transformational in the way that, we're going to experience museums. You said you think you're the first people to do it. Do you see it as very transformative?
Yeah, we're doing it basically as an experiment to test whether this is a thing that is going to be useful for museums or other kind of institutions that are interested in making people care about nature. If we're a few months in, but it really does seem to be working, that we can track how their conversations are developing over the course of many messages. It's really strong signs of engagement there. So I'm sure there is potential for this. And it goes beyond the kind of a chatbot that you might experience online. And it doesn't seem to be how they've built it. It doesn't seem to have the same kind of constraints as, okay, I'm only going to talk to you about this. Like you could ask it literally anything. What's your favorite music? And it will have a useful, interesting answer. Someone asked it during the Conservative leadership elections, who would you vote for? It was to our whale. And it said something very politician-esque in that, you know, it said we don't really get involved with human politics, but from, you know, from our point of view, as long as the winner is someone who cares about nature, then that's, you know, that's fine with us. Which is like, it's on message.
Jack, how do you see AI changing the way that museums or kind of just experiences and I guess attractions more generally interact with visitors going forward?
Having the opportunity to ask anything you want is pretty liberating. You know, like a normal museum label will have like 90 words on it, right? So we in the museum have chosen what 90 words we think is relevant for a platypus. And then somewhat we're guessing what the, you know, what questions a visitor's going to ask that we need to answer in 90 words. So this model, this AI model, is kind of like completely democratizes the museum visit because people can choose exactly what they are interested in, and we don't have to filter through our own assumptions of what those questions might be. And also, I think, you know, we have volunteers in our gallery who do an absolutely amazing job of engaging people with what's on display. But there are questions that visitors won't want to ask another person, like, and also just the opportunity to do it from the object's point of view is completely different. So I think it allows a different kind of conversation.
Have you found that, you know, this experiment has worked in the sense that people have got a deeper connection or even kind of more of an understanding or an appreciation of the species that they're kind of having these conversations with?
It's early days, but I would guess yes. And in fact, that is why we've put species like cockroaches in there, to say, you know, sometimes having a conversation with a cockroach help you feel more kind of empathy engaged towards it. And that is a reason why we've kind of put a different range of specimens from really popular ones or really unpopular ones. So red pandas versus cockroaches is probably a good comparison, but also kind of animals that still have their skin on, taxidermy versus skeletons. Does that impact how people see them? I think it's going to be quite interesting. Nature perspectives. Aim is very specifically, it's not like any tech company, it's very specifically to see, can we make AI help people care about nature, which I think was developed from kind of the idea that having a conversation with a computer helps you feel more kind of warm towards it or less frustrated. That obviously aligns so closely with the Natural History Museum's mission of making people care about nature. So it's we're into it. It's very clear that that's something we should test out.
AI is incredible, but also where we are with it, it's quite a delicate time. And how do you go about making sure that what AI is telling your visitors is true and factual and there isn't any error, which we do see in a lot of forms of generative AI?
Absolutely. And that's for a museum, obviously, that is pretty, especially a university museum, that is pretty important. And so, as I say, this is an experiment, and that is the accuracy side is something we're really interested in. And I'll be honest and I'll say, you know, I've read some of the responses and questions I've asked. I was like, and I've thought, that's not true. And then I've looked into it and it was true. So what we're doing is effectively testing it. So the Nature Perspectives team are kind of using AI, a separate independent language model, to look for statements of fact in the specimen's answers, and then are testing those statements of fact both using AI and using human people to see how accurate it is. And I forget the actual percentage, but early results were kind of more than 99% accurate, which is probably more accurate than human experts talking to people about animals. There's probably some gray areas around what is a statement of fact. So there have been some things that I've spotted where I think, that isn't quite accurate. It's implied something that isn't quite true, which I think our fact checker won't pick up because it wasn't a statement of fact. You know, it's something to keep an eye on, but early signs of this model that's been built by Nature Perspectives is working well.
Do you ever worry that the tech is kind of creating too much of a barrier between the kind of the real living world and, you know, where AI has taken us?
Yeah, it's possible with any kind of digital or other interactive element in a museum that what you're doing is, yeah, stopping people actually looking at the object. But so we've had people that are continuing their conversation with our specimens for like a week after they've left, like they come back every day.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So they're obviously not in the museum, so it's extending that interaction. And like, because so many of the questions are about that animal, the individual rather than the species, feels like a tight relationship between the thing in the museum and the story as well. So it is a risk. That is sort of true for any digital interaction.
What's next? What's happening after the pilot ends? Do you know, are there any plans to expand this, take it anywhere else? Because it's, as I said, it's wholesome and it's positive.
Yeah, so we're really keen to kind of crunch the data and publish on it as a team with some of the academics here as well in Cambridge, just to kind of share the learnings that we've had for other museums to see what they might want to do with it, or other conservation organisations. So kind of work out, have people learned anything? Which are we finding emotional evidence of deeper connections in there? So we're kind of using the data, the thousands of conversations, to kind of try and track what kind of impact it's having on our visitors.
I love it. Jack, it was awesome talking to you. George, we need to arrange a trip. I think this is very hard to try and understand, Dennis. We need to come down and do it.
Live from the museum. Can't wait for that.
Jack, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Big thank you to Jack. Obviously, it's quite experimental right now. I could see this technology really changing the way that tourism and that kind of entertainment industry is. You can imagine this being used on a much bigger scale, be it going to Disneyland and having a live conversation with a statue of Mickey Mouse or Winnie the Pooh. Or I kind of feel like that could quite quickly be implemented into some of the world's biggest tourist attractions.
Yeah. I mean, he said it there at one point. What you used to have was this limited space on a physical plaque or a sign where you'd have to articulate something. Now you've kind of got this like infinite conversation that you could have with these things that don't exist anymore. But yeah, you could have that with Goofy or Minnie Mouse, whatever it could be.
You could be on the London Eye and go like, what am I looking at right now? Yeah. What's the history of that tall building with a clock on? You know, it could be a really interesting way to kind of enrich tourism experiences.
And I think the thing I thought was profound was it's not someone sat somewhere deciding what to tell you. It's kind of on the terms of the tourist or the visitor. It's kind of whatever they want to know, which is, I think, getting people, particularly kids, to places like museums and things like that. I could be totally revolutionary. I mean, I'm not dragging them kicking and screaming to Disneyland, granted, but maybe museums. So I think this is another wonderful example. Mm. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. We love a personalised use of AI as well. Very, very interesting. Okay, James, are you ready to lose once again?
Look at him. He's just... who's this guy sat opposite me? Incredible. Well,
for the last couple of editions of this podcast, we have faced off in the AI challenge. Mm. James, for the last couple of editions, you've lost.
Yeah, head's got to be back in the game. I don't really want to disclose how much or little I've been training this week. But we'll see.
I think I'm in your head now. And I am very excited to advance in this challenge. And as I said, I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I'm focused. Once I get level, then you'll be hearing from me.
Okay.
On that, it's time to get into this week's AI challenge. And if you searched Producer Molly into ChatGPT, do you know what it would say, James? Extraordinary. It's not very creative. We've covered that in today's episode. Hello, Molly.
Fancy seeing you guys here.
We missed you last week.
Oh, yeah. How was Cannes?
Speak for yourself.
Yeah.
We can.
Were you guys in Cannes?
Yeah, last week.
You wouldn't know.
Last week. You wouldn't
know.
Tough gig, Mom.
Yeah.
Tough gig.
Yeah, photos all over the Instagram. James and I had like a little... it looks like we've been papped, didn't it? It looked like we've been... like you can, if you don't follow us on Instagram, good time to plug it, isn't it?
It was nice of your personal photographer to include me in some of the shots.
Yeah. I mean, I considered getting him to like AI you out of them just so it left me. But also, a lot of conversation about one of the photos in which we are recording the podcast on the beach. Yes, we were in Cannes. I was wearing shoes, James wasn't. A lot of conversation.
Oh, I've had a bit of heat about that. Got my trotters out. Mm. Yeah, not ideal.
Oh no, I saw the photo and I was like, shoes on the beach? What are you doing? Sand in your shoes, that's horrible.
I had my socks on, it was fine. Don't you worry, Molly. Don't you worry about me.
What you got for us this week, Mum?
This week, on the theme of, since we've been talking about animals with Jack, I've generated some AI animal sound effects.
Very good. Here we go.
Right, we're going to hear different animals. How many animals are we going to hear?
So you're going to hear two cats, two whatever else may come, but one's AI and one is a real cat.
Okay,
or
right.
Or whatever respective animal.
I love how you're keeping the animal a secret. Mm,
I know, yeah.
Love it.
Maybe we have to try and guess. All right, let's hear from the cat.
Okay. Let's hear from the cat. Here's cat number two.
Yes, come on.
That is a, that's like a Star Wars creature.
On.
Okay, James, which is the cat and which is the K-8?
Kate or cat?
AI cat's got an eye in it. See what I did?
I mean, unless we're being absolutely done here. I mean, the first one was clearly lovely little pussycat. Second one.
I mean, that didn't sound like a cat.
Ewok, saber-tooth.
David, though. David's in the studio. Producer David, which did you think? Which did you go for?
Yeah, again, I agree. I think one sound is like a Wookiee.
Yeah,
the other one
exactly.
Real. Yeah, as a cat owner as well.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
okay. He's bringing some context to this.
As a cat, thank you. Well, now he's kind of as a cat owner. Yeah, I'm definitely going to stick with. Yeah, I mean, we're both going for the first cat was real. The second cat,
100%.
But
oh no,
the only thing I'm thinking is the second one sounded so rubbish. I don't think AI would make a cat sound that bad. So you're going to go with cat one is real. I'm going to go with cat two is real.
What? Madness.
There is some method to that madness.
No.
Cat two is real.
No!
Oh, here we go! 1-0. The first penalty slotted in the bottom left corner. James skies it over the bar. Okay, Mo, what's animal number two?
Okay, imagine you guys are in the park, chilling by a little lake or a pond, and you're feeding the ducks. There's your first lot of ducks.
I have a slight issue here that I don't think I know what a duck actually sounds like.
I think the second one is someone's got, because you're not supposed to give ducks bread. You're supposed to give them peas.
Yeah.
And
you know a lot about ducks.
I think
ducks,
someone's got a load
you?
Of peas, chuck them, and the ducks have gone mad. I think it was number two.
You think two's real?
Two's real.
I think I'm going to say duck one is real.
Yeah, I agree. I think two, because you've actually got the background wildfowl as well. You haven't just got a duck there, you've got other.
Interesting. Well, you are a duck owner. So
yeah, duck owner.
And someone who also owns a duck.
Yeah. I enjoy ducks too. I mean,
enjoy ducks.
Cooked well, they're delicious. I'm all vegetarian listeners of this podcast. It was a joke. Okay, we've gone. James, I went for
two.
Two. I went for one.
Two is the real duck.
Thank you.
So round, so that's one all. All right, we're going to go to the Wild West.
Oh.
And there's going to be a horse galloping past you.
Okay.
Horse number two.
AKA Great Western Railway.
It's like I'm in Back to the Future 3. niche reference that. I think the second is real. I heard the footsteps plodding, and I think the second's real.
Oh, I could play percentages and maintain a lead, but I won. One is real. Come on, common sense is going out the window. Okay. One is obviously real. As a stable owner, David.
As someone who also owns a horse, I struggle to think either of them are real. I think...
Oh, you wouldn't, Molly. You wouldn't. No.
Yeah, I'm going to go with one.
Yeah.
It was trying too hard to add the other elements. And it
great point.
Mainly
overcompensating. Yeah.
Okay, James has said horse one is real. I've said horse two is real. The winner of this wins this round. Molly, could you please reveal the answer?
George is correct.
Vamos.
Just a really bad recording of a horse, I think.
Well, my many hours watching repeats of Back to the Future 3 have paid off. But as I said, James, you look very unhappy and very sad, but I'm not going to celebrate. I'm still losing. You're still 4-3 up. I'm coming for you.
I feel broken.
I'm coming for you.
This is
But
where has this all horribly gone wrong?
It's not there yet. So next week, we'll find out if I can bring it back on track. James looks devastated, and I love it. And on that note, I think we're going to come out on a high. Thank you so much for joining us this week on AI Haven't a Clue. Big thanks to Jack, our fantastic guest this week, for joining us. And of course, to you for listening.
And of course, if you've got a question, a weird AI story, or you're using some brilliant AI that you want to tell us about, don't forget about my hard question. Drop us an email, aihaven'taclue@gmail.com, and we're on all the socials.
Please do subscribe, rate, or even share the podcast. It helps with our algorithms, and we love that. And of course, we'll be back next week with more of James's top tips. A big thanks to our fantastic AI Haven't a Clue team, Molly Carter and David May. We will catch you next time. And remember,
stay curious.